So, guys, hello and welcome to the We Are The Girls in Claret and Blue FAWSL podcast. And today we are joined by Rodney Cyrus from On and Off The Pitch. Welcome, Rodney.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Getting there. Okay. And somebody who's been upgraded to co-host for one night only. I'm tempted to sing this song One Night Only here. Rich Bice from our Bristol City Women's Supporters Society. Welcome, Rich, and congratulations on the upgrade.
It's an honour, Reece. Thanks for having me back so quickly.
Well, we were only speaking yesterday. So we're going to discuss, should there be a UEFA Women's Europa League?
No.
Who is the best defender in the FA Women's Super League? And we're also going to expand on a UEFA competition of should there be a UEFA Women's Nations League internationally? So let's start with the first topic. And Rodney's already gave us his opinion.
No, I just asked a question.
Should there be a UEFA Women's Europa League? Now, this question stemmed from the Champions League being extended into a group stage in two seasons' time. Rodney, what do you make of this? Should there be a UEFA Women's Europa League?
There have been calls from a section of the fans that I've spoken to in the WSL that believes there should be a Europa League because it would then allow them to go on tour and obviously the team that they support to get more experience on a European level. I don't know whether or not the WSL is going to be strong enough in terms of the teams that are currently there to actually fill those places in the Europa League if they do actually create one. When you look at the Champions League for the women, you've got the top three who are kind of steady and always kind of consistent opponents and contenders within that competition. We've seen it within the WSL, the top three. There is a big gap between third and fourth. You know, you'd want a Europa League team to consist of teams that are punching towards the top of the league, but also have been consistent within the Champions League. So it's about whether or not the teams within the WSL are strong enough to compete. And if there is a Europa League, if they do bring that about, which teams then believe that they should be included, and how far down the league do you start to include teams?
I think one way that they could do it, Rodney, and I think this would be how they stem it. I think it would be the fourth place in the WSL, and then I think it would probably be the FA Cup. So then you have two teams. What I was thinking, this is basically what I was thinking of. You have two teams from the top eight nations in Europe, and have like just 16 teams to start off with the last 16, and then you start to grow the tournament when the game becomes more sustainable for teams to be able to travel internationally around Europe, because you have to consider that. I think a last 16 towards maybe February until the end of the season, I think would be great for the game in terms of growing the European stage for not only the Women's Super League, but La Liga and the Italian Serie A. And I also think it could boost TV rights internationally. I mean, the Women's Super League have kind of started to do that. I think for other leagues, La Liga and the Italian leagues, I think something like this could be important. What's your take on it, Rich?
Well, I suppose if you'd have asked me a month ago, it sounded like a good idea. But the problem we're going to have now going forward is a lot of the clubs are going to be hit really hard financially because of this coronavirus issue. I mean, I read an article today that sort of implied that some clubs actually might go bust over it. So I think that's another issue you've got, is the cost. But apart from quality, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, you have seen the top three, you have seen the top three pull away. But I mean, are the other, but I think it is one of the strongest leagues in Europe, though, isn't it? So it's a bit, I think the fourth team in this country, probably fourth or fifth or sixth even, probably is a bit stronger than most other leagues. Yeah. Sort of same team in most other leagues in Europe. You know, that's my take on it.
Do you not think, and this is a question I'm towards Rodney now, on this debate, if once teams kind of recovered from what's going on now and with this pandemic, and then they implemented it at a time where teams were more financially stable within the women's game, that it could be great in terms of bolstering teams' interests in cup competitions like the FA Cup?
I mean, I like Rich has read the same article, and I think in terms of the question, would it be good? I believe it would be good, but the issue is, from a domestic point of view, the league needs to be strong enough in itself. And I know that as fans, we talk about the players that we want to see in the league, the players that our teams buy or are linked with, and we're all excited about those. But the reality is that the women's game is, despite the kind of the interest that has been, in, you know, peaked from the World Cup, there is a financial issue. There are financial implications and financial restrictions about how quickly they can grow, in, whether it's about their own ground, whether it's about training facilities, whether it's about salaries, sponsorship, everything. So, you know, it's you do want a strong league so that the teams within that league to be financially strong so that they can then go and actually compete on a European level. Because what you don't want is to actually have a Europa League in the women's game and whoever's fourth or fifth go there and they just get absolutely battered on the European stage. And, you know, that will do no one any good. But saying that, and not, this is not a sly dig at Rich, Bristol have had problems when they played Arsenal and they conceded heavily. So, you know, there are issues within the league in terms of what we see, in terms of the gap in terms of performance and the goals that go in. But at the same time, you do want those teams to go abroad and get more experience. So, you know, from a personal point of view, I would say it would be a good thing. But before we jump into that kind of boat and sail off down the river, the domestic league needs to be really secure, you know, in terms of its grounds, support, everything. It needs to be really secure.
Rich, just on a different perspective as well, because I think this as well with my club, West Ham, if Bristol City was to qualify for the Europa League, say they introduced it within two seasons, do you think it could ruin Bristol City women's team financially in terms of the financial commitments that come with that?
Yeah, I think it wouldn't. They'd have to weigh it up, wouldn't they, really? Because it wouldn't be, you know, it's like, would it be worth entering it, you know, in our current situation? And I don't think it would be, to be fair. I mean, we have been in, we have been in Europe. We've been in the Champions League, obviously. We're not Barcelona, right, famously, but I think they. But yeah, I don't know, because they play a few of these big games. They have played a few of these big games at Ashton Gate, so it depends who we got. Whether we get a decent crowd at Ashton Gate, I don't know. But it's like you say, you're just weighing up those options, isn't it?
Rodney, on a Man United perspective, I think if this was implemented, I think Man United would probably be the favourites to be fourth. Do you think Man United would be able to, their women's team alone, financially be able to put up with that sort of commitment?
I don't know. To be honest, I could say yes, but I have a different position in terms of, I see the two clubs, and I say two clubs in terms of Manchester United men and women being separate. I see that the women's team, like any of the other teams, there are always going to be financial implications and limitations. In terms of where they are in the league, they could probably compete just by their league position. But in the long term, unless there is, you know, some real financial commitment, I don't know whether or not it would be good for them in the long term. But I'm sure that when, you know, the United fans listen back to this pod, they'll be like, what are you talking about? You're not selling the team enough.
But I don't think they'd have to worry about it, because I think West Ham would do the double over Man United again and qualify for Europe.
Man United are in a good position in terms of where they are.
Yeah.
But I think for me, to go into Europe, you need to win something first in your domestic league. That's just how I see it. I don't believe this. If there is a Europa League, then it needs to be because of someone who wins. It needs to be a cup. If it was linked to the FA Cup, then I'd say yes. Then if you don't win the FA Cup and then it goes to the next place or the team that didn't win the cup, then you'd say, I get it. But just to give it because someone's in their fourth in the league, you know.
Somebody would have thought of this a year ago. West Ham would be in Europe right now because it would have been the runners up of the FA Cup.
Well, to be honest, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the men's game, they used to have the old European Cup, then it was the Cup Winners' Cup. Or Europe, you know what I mean? There was a Cup Winners' Cup. So if you had an on-European stage, if you were the winners of the FA Cup, then you went and played all of the other teams in Europe who had won a cup.
Yeah.
Who didn't win the league. And that's the route you want to go down. Actually giving it to a team that's fourth or fifth or sixth in the league, but they haven't won a trophy. I'm like, I don't get that. You know, you need to actually make the competition a worthwhile competition because someone has actually achieved something domestically to get there. You know, and like I said, Rich, I can see the Man United fans lining up right now, waiting to have a pop shot.
Well, you could even go one further. You could even give the you could breathe some life into the Conti Cup as well.
Exactly.
You could give the Conti Cup. I mean, because you have to play. I mean, you have to play six. You have to play about eight games to win the Conti Cup. You've only got to win four or five to win the FA Cup. So exactly. It's probably. I know you play a few lower. In the Conti Cup, you play a few lower league teams, but it's still a pretty hard competition to win, and it's got a lot of criticism. So you could probably breathe a bit of life into it by giving somebody a European place by winning it.
Exactly. I mean, to be honest, made it even better. The Conti Cup is a perfect example of someone actually saying, "We've won this trophy. We can now go and play in Europe." Makes total sense. Absolutely total sense. Giving it to someone who's fourth is fine, but there needs to be a cup winner in there or someone who's won, a team that has won a trophy.
Roddy, just a question that I've been waiting to ask a Manchester United fan that I've seen lately on Twitter. Something about Man United signing a big signing up front. In the summer. So, what do you think about
Jane Ross. We've got Jane Ross.
She's not a best friend.
You know what? I'm so glad you said that because I know Ali will say something else. No, they need to make a. The conversations that have taken place on Twitter began because Chelsea signed someone. Chelsea signed a player, a World Cup player, German, and it just sent kind of Twitter Man United fans into a meltdown in terms of what the club was not doing. And the reality is that you need to have the financial clout to do that. Two, you need to have the scouting network. And three, what does the player want? Does the player want to go to a team that's just recently been created and hasn't had a long-term history in a top-flight football? Or are they going to go to a team that's been established and they have a stellar roster of players and they're going to go in and join? You know, players have their own kind of minds as well. So in terms of what Man United need to do in terms of signing a stellar player, I think Manchester United, like most clubs, are caught between looking over there at the very expensive shelf and saying, I want that one. or as opposed to promoting your own. And actually, as people, you know, they say they're coaches and managers, find the kids that are in your academy and coach them to success. So it's caught between we're a great club, we've got academy kids, but we want to buy the best. You know, which one is it? And as Man United don't necessarily have the money, they need to actually think about coaching the young ones and bringing them through, because, you know, they bought Jackie Gronin. And I'm going to say to you now as a bet, in a sense, which is a kind of a little bit of a laugh. The player that Chelsea have signed, she'll probably score a goal before Jackie Gronin. That's the reality. That's the reality, is because Jackie Gronin, for all that, she's not a goal scorer. So Man United of talking about buying a striker, they had a striker in the Championship and they played him out on the wing. She hasn't played as in it. So, you know, who knows what Man United need? I'll be really honest. I look at it and I think you have players that can score goals, but they're not playing in that position. So, you know, it's a mystery.
I mean, Jane Ross is just not sort of getting on. I mean, she's not that popular at United at all, is she? I mean, it's a player I've said to you, Rodney, before, I've always rated Jane Ross.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite strange to see sort of how she's doing down there.
Well, I look at Jane. Sorry, Reese. I look at Jane and I think that you can't play someone like that. I think she needs a partner. You know, some systems don't suit strikers. Man United have, it doesn't matter who the opposition are, they're going to play a 4-3-3. You know, it may look like a 3-5-2 or 3-4-2 at one or whatever, or 3-4, whatever. It doesn't matter. They actually don't play with a two strikers up front. They like to have wingers. And I think Jane Ross really does need someone behind her or next to her as a striking partner. And, you know, we've seen Ellen White, for all of the goals that she scored for England, when she's playing in the Manchester City shirt alongside Bremer, a different level altogether. Put her in an England shirt, people start questioning her. Put her in the Man City shirt, she's scoring goals. I think with Jane Ross, if you put someone like that up front without any support, they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle, and she struggled, unfortunately. And Man United fans have been like saying, yeah, you know, we need a striker. You had someone last year who scored like 16 goals. You know, either she's on the wing or she's on the bench.
I think with Jane Ross, though, on Rich's point, I think with West Ham last season, she only really started firing when we bought Adriana Leon, and we kind of partnered them two up, which backs up Rodney's point. However, when she left, I wasn't that gutted.
Why not? Actually,
I think now, looking in hindsight, the reason I'm not gutted now, and I wasn't then, because I kind of thought there was better strikers out there, and I'll go on record to say I think Martha Thomas is a much, much better striker than Jane Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, what's your thoughts on that statement?
You can't not even say anything.
No, I think... No, like I said, I really like Jane Ross. I mean, I'd have her at Bristol. I'd have her at Bristol City tomorrow.
Easy.
Especially if the news about Ebony Salmon proves to be true. Yeah.
And what is that news?
There's a strong rumor apparently that she's going to Manchester City. So that's the story at the moment.
Well, that's like getting poked in the eye by a hot stick, isn't it, as a Manchester United fan, isn't it, really?
Could have been a hard podcast for Rodney.
I know.
Martha Thomas is better than Jane Ross. Salmon's going to their main rivals, Manchester City. Not going too well for him.
Well, I don't know. So,
let's go on to our next topic, and as I read it, Rodney's getting his Tottenham Neville shirt on. Who is the best defender in the FA Women's Super League? Rich, we'll start with you.
Oh, put me on the spot there.
The best defender.
The best defender. just trying to go through the I'm trying to go through the teams actually.
Say Jenny Flaherty, Rich.
I love Jilly's a bit. She's but we were talking about it the other day. Millie is brilliant in a Chelsea shirt.
She is.
I mean, she's as good as anybody.
Yeah.
But obviously in an England shirt, not the case.
Doesn't work.
Well, no, but our manager's absolutely useless, so.
Wow.
no comments.
But the Arsenal girls are they're all pretty good, aren't they? You can't really.
Yeah, I was going to say that, wouldn't
you? Yeah, she's a good defender. She's steady. I mean, obviously, I'm going to put up. It's not Ashley Neville. Sorry, I'm going to speak up for Millie Turner. You know, I do like her a lot. He's laughing. You got to be honest. I do like her a lot, but what you see for your club and what you see elsewhere in the league, people always question and say that the players that you have are the best players. So, I'd say that she's definitely up there in terms of one of the best defenders in the league. But as to say she's the best, you know, it's very difficult to pin that down, because when you talk about Millie Bright for Chelsea and then, like you say, you see her in an England shirt, two different people, two totally different people. But for Chelsea, outstanding. Emma Mitchell, you've got defenders that can score goals like that, you kind of like step back and go, whoa. But it's a very difficult thing to say who is the best defender in the WSL, but I'm going to go with Millie Turner.
I mean, call me biased though. I mean, Jazz Matthews has come back to Bristol City and she has been absolutely sensational this season. I mean, she's won, we do this Vixen of the Game, and she's won like three or four of them. And she's, she's been, some of the tackles that she's put in, and, she has absolutely sensational game against Manchester City where we only lost 1-0.
Yeah.
And that was, that was really good. So, yeah.
The reason I look at Millie and I think that she's a Rolls Royce of a defender. Doesn't seem to be flustered when she's on the ball. Very good at intercepting. Then deals with one-on-one situations very, very well. Good feet. Has a trick with her in terms of if she needs to get out of tight spots. And keeps it simple in terms of her passing. I wish sometimes she'd be a little bit more adventurous with the passing out, because that tends to happen from Abby McManus. And I think with Millie, there needs to be something more expansive in her game. And I think if that was to be part of her game, she would be included in an England squad, definitely. Because when you look at the way that Steph Houghton plays and Millie Bright play, they are centre-backs that not only just dominate their position, but they're actually almost like the playmaker from the back. They dictate everything.
Millie's a much better defender than Abby McManus, though, isn't she, wouldn't
she? She is a better defender, but, I want to see, for me, for her to go up to the next level, when you talk about the best, you talk about club by club, if you talked about, like, Millie Bright, you need her to do more in terms of her distribution. That's what I'm saying, personally, and people may say that I'm wrong, but that's what I see. And the odd time when the ball has been played out by Abby, they've been intercepted. And I think sometimes as a defender, you need to know what you can and you cannot do. And if you're working in a partnership, someone is always stronger at something than the other player. You just work at the week. You work out what you're strong at and you say that player does this and I do that. But I'm still going with Millie, because for me, she's just like she's a Rolls Royce, just glides across the grass, and she deals with things very, very well. And like every defender, she gets caught out. But, it doesn't mean that she's not good. For me, she's very good.
I think the best ball-playing defender in the FA Women's Super League, being biased, is, for me, Jilly Flaherty.
No, never.
No, seriously, I haven't seen somebody as good as Jilly on the ball from seeing live. I would say Williamson is near her, but I seriously just don't think it. Well, in terms of best defender, I probably would say Leah Williamson from what I've seen live and in person. Because I think what she does really well is she gets in front of the striker and intercepts well. Her distribution of the ball is fantastic. She actually starts, if you watch Arsenal, she actually starts a lot of their attacks.
Yeah.
And she's actually one of the reasons why Miedema's darting runs are so effective is because Leah sprays the ball out wide and gives Miedema that chance to make a run into the box. So I would probably say Leah Williamson. However,
Don't worry. Listen, I mentioned Leah Williamson before, and I thought, before there's anyone is a London bias, you've got to kind of be aware of all of the defenders in the WSL, how good they are for their teams, and you know we're all carrying a little bit of bias and we're saying our own defenders, but you know, if we push came to shove and we actually had to rank them in terms of what they did stats wise, interceptions, whether they used their left and their right foot, how many headers did they win, you know, what did they do in terms of one-on-ones, they might stack up literally on par with one another. So then you're literally going on by what you believe as a fan to where they would rank. So you know,
that's another thing Williamson does as well, though, Rodney. She wins most of her one-on-ones, doesn't she?
Which is why she got the call up, because she's that versatile. She's a very versatile defender. So I'm still going with Millie.
The thing is,
one of my favourites, sort of in the last year or so, has been Jen Beattie. I've always been a fan of hers. I mean, I know she's probably not as effective at Arsenal because they've got so many good players. But I've always been a massive fan of as an all round defender is what she is.
You know, one thing though as well is I think if Minnie Bryant, seriously though, was playing under a different manager for England, I think all of us would have said her, because I think she just gets overshadowed for her performances in an England shirt, and it's not her fault. It's because the manager isn't playing not only our defence, but the whole team in the right system for England.
Well, I mean, how long have we got tonight? You know, seriously.
We've only got 45 minutes. Don't start me off, Rodney.
Yeah, don't start him off, look.
Let's just expand on this topic. As we've been slightly biased, if you had to pick one player that's not at your club in defence to join them,
start with Rich. Are you asking me or Rich?
Rich. Oh.
I would probably go for...
You say Julian Alvarez.
I'm going to wind you up now. I would probably go for Gilly. I would probably go for Gilly because another reason is her leadership. I think it's sort of Lauren Dykes is coming near the end. She's sort of not playing. She's hardly playing now, to be honest, for about two... Well, since Christmas, she's hardly played a game. We do need that leader on the pitch. I'd go for... It'd be Gilly for me.
Yeah, sorry, Rich. She only plays for big clubs, so...
Man United banned him.
Rodney, don't start me off with them lot.
Upgrade that shirt to a red.
No, downgrade it. Don't wind me up.
You got great.
She'd look good in red, wouldn't she?
She'd look great in red.
I started these two off.
Yeah, I mean, got your number.
Rodney, who would you choose to join Manchester United in defence?
Oh, gosh. I want to say something slightly odd, if that's allowed. I don't think Man United need a defender. I don't. I know that there's. I know that I have spoken out and spoken up about Ashley Neville. I liked her as a defender when I first saw her play, when I watched them live, and I thought, very, very capable and combative. But there are so many good defenders in the WSL. I'm happy with what I see at Manchester United. I think the areas where they need to change or improve on, isn't there? But to be greedy, if I have to pick one defender, it'd be Chile.
Oh, no, don't. Ali is going to absolutely kill you, someone, which he listens to.
Get that red shirt on.
She's got a choice to make then, hasn't she, Gillias? Where's she going to go? Where does she want to go? Manchester or Bristol?
Well, I think Matt will agree on this. I think she'd rather stay at West Ham than join any of them two clubs.
Look, come on. There's always the prospect of a Europa League game, you know? It's all about Europe. It's all about Europe. Fourth spot.
I'm really having to bite my tongue now.
That's what happens when you're hosting. To
join West Ham with Julie, if it wasn't FA Women's Super League, I'd probably pick to bring Brooke Hendricks back. I mean, I'd love to see her in a West Ham shirt again. She was absolutely fantastic for us when she was with us. And before she left, she was probably in prime position and in pole to get hammered here. But unfortunately, Brooke left for the NWSL. But in the Women's Super League, if I had to pick one defender, it wouldn't be anybody from Man United because they're Bristol City. It'd probably be Leah Williamson. Because I think her and Gilly, the two best ball-playing defenders, and Leah has got potential as well when you speak about her to improve. And the fact that she's that good already at that age and she has such potential to improve. I mean, if she played for West Ham, she'd probably make us the top four or five teams because she's that good of a defender.
Ah, well, would she go there, though?
Yeah.
Obviously, she likes to wear red, you know. So.
You're really trying to wind me up this podcast, ain't you?
A full red shirt is always better than one that's not mould wined. Rhys is dumbfounded. He's like, no.
Rhys is speechless for a change, isn't he?
I'm actually considering kicking you two off.
Yeah, we won't be. We're going to get escorted out the building, Rodney. I think, aren't we? At this rate,
I think we are. We've pushed it to the limit so far. We've pushed it.
Just another topic while I try to calm myself down. If you could pick any player in any position, in any league, so you had one player to pick to join your team, Rodney, who would that be? Tonight?
Wow. Any player from any league.
Yep. Oh. Put this into perspective, Rodney, okay? So,
yeah.
Casey Stoney comes up to you and says, we've got an unlimited budget to sign any player in the world and join Manchester United. Who would it be? So, no money matters. It's just that player.
I would probably go with... it'd be American. It'd be American. I know I'm going left field. I'd go with Rose Lavelle.
Yeah.
Rose Lavelle. I would. I think what I see of this player is someone who is she's very graceful on the ball. Very good in terms of defensive responsibilities, but also she's very creative. And I like what I see of her in the midfield. But again, it's some people will probably go for the glitz and the glamour and they'll go with the Harder and all of those other stellar names. But for me, Rose Lavelle, I mean, it'd have been a toss-up between Rose Lavelle and Horan as well for the US women. Because I see two players there and I think they're young, and they've got a bit of bite about them and they've got a bit of flair about them and they can get in and around the goals and score goals. And, you know, I think in the Women's Super League, what you've seen in this current league so far this season is that you have a glut of goals from like Vivian Miedema and then Bremer, Ellen White. And then behind them, they've got players that are on like 4 and 5 goals and then that's it. You kind of ask the question, is that because of the lack of creativity in midfield, or are is the defending that good? And I think if you add an additional bit of magic in the middle of your park, then you get more goals. And I think with when you look at Arsenal and you look at Chelsea, they've got little wizards in, you know, like Richie Love G at Chelsea. She's on the ball. She's, you know, she puts her foot on the ball and spreads it around. At Arsenal, they've got, you know, Jordan Nobbs moving things around for them. And, you know, I think if you have someone in the middle of the park, that would be great. And for me, I think Roosevelt kind of ticks the box. But, you know, sometimes I think totally left field of some of the players, because I know someone else, they'll look at someone else and say, probably Marijan, who's currently plying her trade. And just because Chelsea bought a German player, they'd want a German player as well. So,
Rich, if Bristol City could buy any player in the world and no money mattered, unfortunately for us, there is never going to happen, mate. But
you cannot say Jill.
I just want to ask Rob, what's Aaron Cuthbert done wrong then?
No.
She was your hero.
She hasn't responded to my tweets. That's what she hasn't done. I'm slighted. No, I like Erin. If you asked me to create an all-star team, then Erin and Rose Lavelle would be in it, obviously. But I can only, you said from anywhere in the world, and I thought, you know what, it's easy to go and look at a player within the WSL, but you didn't place those restrictions on me. So I went large.
Yeah, for me, it would, it would be a toss-up for me between Juliet.
Yeah, she's the boss.
Or G. I mean, G is phenomenal. She knows the league inside out. She's been sort of ploughing her trade for Chelsea, and just, you know, she's been brilliant for the last, what, God knows how many years.
Yeah.
But then again, Juliet is Juliet, and she's probably one of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
And it's a position, I mean, our midfield's been awful this year since obviously Julie Beesman's left. Mm. I mean, that's the difference. That's the sort of player. I mean, obviously Julie Beesman's is, you know, she's great. She was a good player, but she's obviously not in Ertz or G's class. So that would that's who I would probably go with. And I don't know. Part of me wants to lean towards G because she knows the league inside out. Yeah. But I'd have both of them if I could.
Well, there you go. I get to get Rose Lavelle and Erin Cuthbert. So, you know, win-win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With West Ham, I'm trying to think of what position we're weak in.
You want Jane Ross back? Is that it?
No. Definitely not.
What? Don't be like that.
Well, no, because I think, not being harsh on Jane, I think we've got a better striker. So with this question, I'm trying to be realistic and trying to improve what we're not.
Mm.
What we need to improve on the pitch. However, I can't think of one. I'll tell you what, the reason I'm going to go for this player, and it's a goalkeeper, is Van Vendel. The reason I say this is because I think at West Ham, with our play style, sometimes against the big teams when we need to be defensive, I think a keeper like Van Vendel, because she's so good at consistently saving shots, should improve our team so much. Anybody that knows me knows I love Courtney Brosnan. She's one of my favourite players at West Ham. But just the fact that I think a keeper like Van Vendel would improve our team quite a lot. I think I'm going to have to pick her. However, outfield, to get Rodney back, I'd have to say Lauren James, because she's one of my other favourite players. And to be fair to Lauren, the reason I say this as well is I think she's unique in the fact that she's one of the only players that can just easily grace while dribbling on the ball so many defenders, or she just shrugs them off, doesn't she, Rodney?
She does. You know, Lauren James is a one-off.
Look at
the
smile going on.
She's a one-off. There's no duplicates in the WSL with Lauren James. There's none. You know, there won't be for a long time. So she wouldn't go to West Ham.
She is I've got to say, she is a quality player. I love watching her play.
Yeah, She could be, you know, they've said that she can be anything she wants to be, and you just watch her on the ball, you just think, how do you do it without even looking like you're trying? You know, you do it without even, you don't even look like you're out of breath, or maybe she's out of breath, but she doesn't look like she is.
Then again, Rodney, if she joined West Ham, she would be on the winning side, wouldn't she?
One game out of 20 doesn't make that the winning side.
Me and Rodney just fire at each other.
Rich is like going, no chance. Oh, gosh. No chance.
Okay, let's go on to our final topic of the night before me and Rodney wind each other up a bit too much. should this is international, Nadine, now. Should there be eWay for Women's Nations League? Now, I'm going to tell you the reason why I say this. I think something happens is there's too many international tournaments around March with the She Believes, the French Cup, I can't remember the name of that, the Algrave Cup. And I think maybe putting them together in a UEFA Women's Nation League with the winner qualifying for the Euros would be better for our game to have after the season's finish. Every 4 years, in between probably the Euros and the World Cup, that sort of thing, I think it would be much better.
I mean, the creation of the league in itself would be a good thing, I think, in terms of the more games the women's game have to play on an international scale, then the better and bigger the game becomes, because that's when everyone kind of tunes in. You know, everyone kind of, you know, all of the nations kind of make a concerted effort to watch the game, and we were involved as well. So that would be a good thing. It's all about when it takes place, if it was created. And, you know, the She Believes Cup is, you know, was created and is in place for a particular reason. And I don't see it going away at all. It's just the timing of it. And it seems inconvenient that it happens within the middle of the league, which then has an impact on games not being played. And then everyone, like fans, you know, we're left waiting, thinking, what are we going to do? We don't know what's happening. And, you know, I miss my game. I miss watching the team. So if they do that kind of league, or in terms of nations, the national teams playing games, then it has to be at the end of the season. Because if you don't, then you mirror what you have in the men's game, where you start the league and then everyone has an international break. And then everyone's like, oh. And then you start the league and then everyone has an international break. And then you start the league and then they have the She Believes Cup break. And then there's an international break. And then you just think there's too much. So if they're going to create that, then it has to be at the end of the season.
I think one point as well is, Rodney, on your point about you can't see the She Believes Cup going away. I think maybe if the women's game got to a stage where you had a 15 to 20 team league, then I think it would have to, because there wouldn't be any time if you had the international European qualifiers or the World Cup qualifiers, as well as a 15-team league plus the FA Cup and the League Cup. Would there be any time for the She Believes tournaments?
Probably not, but I don't believe that, considering the Americans...
Talking years ahead on a 15-team
league. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, you'd love to have the WSL increase in terms of size, 16 teams. But You know, I don't believe that the USA would actually want the competition that they hold as in very important to disappear. So there would have to be some workaround. And I mean, even Richard's mentioned before that the league in its current form, as running parallel with the men's game, probably isn't necessarily the best thing. And Rich, you might expand on that. You said it can go to the summer.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it going back to the summer, to be fair, in the summer league. But another thing you say about your Nations League and drop in, she believes it's another European tournament. As you got your World Cup qualifiers, your Euro qualifiers, all European teams. People want to see trouble is then you wouldn't see your likes of New Zealand, USA, Australia. Sure. You want to see, you know, you don't just want to see European teams, England, sort of from an England point of view, England, Scotland and Wales point of view even. You don't just want to play European teams all the time. You want to see a bit of variety.
Yeah.
And
for me as well, when I look at it, as Richard has said, you know, I know that there's the women's game is kind of growing in the sense in the Middle East, Iran, you know, if you only have you want to include everyone at some point, the women's game is going to literally go around the world and you know, those nations that have very difficult laws in terms of, you know, female representation politically and how they are portrayed in public and what they can and they cannot do in terms of the world of sport. It's like a little bit more freedom, and you know, football has been used as the tool to kind of make changes, and I don't see it being any different for the women. And if you make it a kind of Eurocentric kind of competition, you then, you know, it's like, look at us, and then everyone else is on the outside looking in and feeling why are we not a part of this. And so, I mean, if it does take place, it has to be at the end of the season. But I don't see the She Believes Cup going anywhere at all. Not at all.
So, one thing that I've gathered from this chat, now all of us three have put our point of view across, is I think on my point of a 15-team league, would there be time for the She Believes in March? And then following on from Rich's point about you don't always want to just see the European teams, maybe if you did have a 15-team league, move the She Believes over to the summer and then have maybe the top 15 FIFA ranked, or sorry, the 16 top ranked teams buy it in from FIFA, I think that would be better for the women's game, because the UEFA Nations League is a unique tournament in the men's game and the She Believes is a unique one in the women's. So maybe that would be the conclusion.
I mean, that sounds like an option. You know, it's whether or not the powers that be would go with it, because at the end of the day, it's always going to be about the pecking order, who has priority, where are the competitions ranked in terms of importance, the money, the revenue, and obviously access to pitches, and who will be willing to allow their grounds to be used at those key points throughout the year. So it's all of those things come into play, but in terms of increase, for me, if they increase the Women's Super League, and then, you know, you then start to look at what happens next beyond that, you know. So from a European point of view, from an international point of view, you know, it's all scope. But, you know, as Rich mentioned before, you know, considering this current pandemic, who knows what's going to happen in terms of the domestic situation, whether clubs will be around, whether they'll still be linked to the men's game, or in terms of the sister or parent club, how that's going to work, you have no idea. It's just a lot to kind of get your head around at the moment.
Yeah, I can't really see. I would love to see a 14 or 16 team WSL, but it's a lot of money in this sort of climate for a team to actually pay for the WSL license. So they haven't got to pay extra, because of course they've then got to pay wages for the players, because it's, you know, they're full time. So, you know, I can't imagine a team like sort of Lewis or, you know, any one of those sort of championship teams, it would be a lot for them to do. So yeah, it's I think we're sort of in, I think we're a little bit in limbo at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Where life, I think where life is going, but as you know, you could probably say we're in a bit of limbo in the game as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Talking on that point, Rich, I think not only in football, after this pandemic, I think in life, I think a lot of things are going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just so much uncertainty, isn't there? I mean, sort of like, you know, we're talking about fans last night, you know, fans going to the games. A lot of fans probably won't be able, a lot of people are out of work at the moment. I mean, are people, I know it's only sort of, it's not much, it only costs £7 or £8 to get in, but will fans still be able to afford to go and watch football? You know, you got that. It's the whole picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, one thing that we could discuss before we end the show is I was on American Hammonds just speaking about the West Ham men's team, and they asked me quite a bit about West Ham women. And one of the guys on there said, don't you think the fact that in terms of families, they won't be able to go and afford to watch the men's team if we did keep to a winter league in the women's game, would that boost and the women's games in terms of fans going there, because as a family, the women's game is very affordable right now. Rodrigo, we got your point on that first.
I think when it comes to afford, will the season ticket for the men's game go down in terms of valuation? And then there's the bigger thing about players being paid, what the players are paid in the men's game, you know, and you know, some of it is extortionate when you kind of, in this current climate, when we're talking about people not being in work and being out of work and potentially not being able to earn a living, and the football family is feeling part of that. You know, I don't understand how some aspects of a football club can have so much money go one way and it not the other. So yes, it will be difficult for families to go and watch football because of the financial implications, whether they are themselves impacted because they've been out of work or they haven't got access to revenue like they had before. But it kind of says a lot about the way football is run, that they've come to this point and is what you call almost the neglected child. You know, they are your child by name only, but not because of care or love. And there's that aspect. You look at it in terms of the women's game, you say, you've got our name, but, you know, you fend for yourself. And I look at it and I think, I don't get it. I just don't get it, considering the amount of money that any particular top flight footballer is on. Imagine $200,000 a week. Just saying it alone makes me think, what? I don't get that. So, you know, if the money men who talk about football and have got their head into football, if they understand what it is, if they were smart and realised that they invested and took care of the women's game, you would bring about not only more fans, but a sustained revenue from both parts of the footballing world that you are in care of, that you are meant to be the guardians of, instead of treating one aspect of it almost like the child you didn't want.
What you said about $200,000 a week, Rodney, to put into perspective, if somebody paid me that, I'd probably be able to, me and Ali would be able to make this podcast sustainable probably for the rest of our life. So $200,000 a week.
I think we'd live off your salary, me and Rich. We wouldn't even have to work afterwards.
I think we would, wouldn't we? Yeah.
as long as we keep Jilly Flatterty, you can have your living, guys.
No, don't worry. We tap Jilly up and go, listen, we'll give you a subsidy. Just wear the red. Doesn't matter which red it is. Crystal red.
Rich, I think you could have a situation. I can see a situation of there not being many, especially in the men's game, there not being many of these big transfers happening, because especially if like the world is like going for a massive recession as is predicted, you know, people are really struggling, it would look pretty silly if like Chelsea or Manchester City sign some bloke for like 30 million or whatever it is. You know, I could see there not being as many of those sort of things going on.
Rich, I can tell you that there will be those kind of transfer deals, and what you have, even though we are having this conversation right now in a really measured way, there will be some fan out there talking about it as if it is okay, even though they are probably going to lose their job, because in their mind they think it is more important that a football player is paid 200 grand a week. The world changed. The world has changed. There needs to be a reset where there is common sense. And I hope you are right that some clubs realise they can't go around spending that kind of money on tick in the hope that they're going to get it back from advertising sales or betting shops or, you know, some, you know, 365 sponsorship, all of those things. Football across the board, whether it's men's game, the women's game, they need to kind of look at it in a totally different way and say, if we're going to do this for them, we need to do this for them, you know, and be balanced.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing as well that happens a lot around my age group and when I'm like around college and stuff, Rodney, is when our age group now, where we've been brought up with players on this sort of money, you know, I hear kids go, well, he's only on 100 grand a week. And luckily through my non-league backgrounds, I kind of think, what are you on about, only on 100 grand a week? So yeah. I think your point about people thinking it's more important that their football team has a player on 100 grand a week probably relates more to my age group, because we're so used to it.
Yeah, I don't think it's just about age. I think it's about a mindset that people have, and they are... they're so kind of entwined and embedded in the club's ethos and ideology that they only see what they think is right. And sometimes, like, you know, you just have to take a step back and look at things logically. That's all. And I love football. As much as I'm a Man United fan, I want to watch as much football as I possibly can while I'm alive. It doesn't matter who it is. I want to watch the game and talk about the game. And for me to do that, it needs to be available. So if I can only go to the park and watch it, then I'll go to the park. But if it's on TV, if it's part of a club that I support and they're showing this and this, and I'm thinking, well, okay, I want these two teams, not necessarily to be paid equally, because someone's going to come up with an argument saying that they shouldn't, but there needs to be a distribution of money so that that both sides of the game can actually function well and survive moments like this, where they're not having to worry about staff not being paid, staff being sacked. You know, they need to have their own insurance policy for moments like this, because if I was doing something, they'd say you need insurance. If Rich did something, they'd say you need insurance. You need insurance. Clubs have insurance, but you never know that they're using the insurance the right way. But if they're actually managing their money from the beginning appropriately across the board in a way that everyone can understand and see clearly, then it makes sense. But I'll say it again, when this is over, people will forget this happened and they will start talking about silly figures as if it is okay, and it's not okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Rich. Sorry, that's almost like a rant. That's there, apologies.
Well, to be fair, mate, it's quite fantastic. Really got me engaged there, and with what you said. It's quite a powerful message, actually.
It is a very powerful message. Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, you can use that as a soundbite.
Yeah. We'll do. Rodney for Barking and Tagnum MP. So let's end the podcast on this topic. Rich, what do you think after this pandemic, what do you think the situation in women's football will be?
Well, like we said, like we've been going on, it's definitely a worry. You know, there will be men's clubs will be struggling. And my massive concern is the first thing that's going to be cut, the women's team, you know. That's and let's just hope that's not the case. I mean, ideally, you know, we can carry on in, what, 4 or 5 months or whenever that is and carry on from where we left. But I'm sad to say I don't think that will be the case. I think there will be sort of victims along the way, so to speak, from a football insider thing.
Rich, as the only person on this podcast that's teams not got a Premier League club behind them, do you worry about Bristol City Women when you speak about this?
Yeah, absolutely, because we've not exactly been coming forward in investing in the team. I mean, you know, it's a Bristol Sport is a big family. I mean, it's not just football. They run the men's and women's football, the men's and women's rugby. They've got the basketball. I think he's got other things. John Lansdowne, who owns Bristol Sport. Bristol Sport have got a massive, their hands are in all sorts of pies. So if Bristol Sport take a hit, you know, who's going to go first? It's going to be the women's team. Deeply concerned, yeah.
Rodney, what do you think the end goal will be?
Rich has said a lot that I cannot kind of disagree with. I'm concerned that there will be some clubs that might fall by the wayside, and it will be sad if that's the case. But I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I'm hoping that the clubs in the football hierarchy, the top part, look around and think what do we need to do to change. And I'm hoping that when they do that, the women's clubs are still there. And I don't just mean the clubs that are attached to the men's teams like Man United and Chelsea and the Man Cities and the Arsenals. I mean the Bristols. For me, when I look at Bristol as a WSL club, that part of the world is the only part of the world that doesn't have a Premier League team in the men's. And I know that part of the world. I've been there quite a few times and it's got such talent and the people there are so into their sport. You know, they need to have a women's Super League team. They actually need to have a Premier League team. But if they don't have a Premier League team in terms of the men, then they definitely need to make sure that Bristol does not fold. If they get relegated, they do not fold. They are still going, because it would be, for me, criminal if that happens.
One thing from my club's point of view, and this is something I'm worried about, with the West Ham women's team, is not the fact of not being in existence anymore, because I realise we've got Premier League club, but I was saying this when the men's team were in threat of going down to the Championship, that the reason me and Ali was actually so worried about that was because we knew the first thing they was probably going to cut would be the women's team wage budget. And now I think when you look at the Premier League situation in terms of TV money, and Rodney probably agree with this with Manchester United, if the men's team does have to give that TV money back, I don't know if they will have to, then I think the wage budget for the women's teams may be reduced because of that.
Do you know what? I honestly don't know about that. That would be bad and sad if it did happen. You know, I think that the men's teams can take the hit financially. They can take the hit because what they were, in terms of the money, they haven't had that money come in. Or if they have and they've not been able to fulfil the league games. I mean, it's not even just so much about the players' salaries. You've got to think about season ticket holders. You know, are they going to refund them for games that didn't take place?
Yeah.
You know, so there are a lot of things at stake. So I think in terms of how the game goes forward from here, it's really important in terms of how they do the management. But, you know, as Richard said, and you know, it's uncharted waters right now. We don't know. You know, we can only kind of guess and hope. But, yeah, sad times, because I love my football, man.
One thing that does make me quite a bit positive about that situation, about cutting wage budgets, is I think that Jack Sullivan, the person who runs the West Ham women's team, I think he's so passionate and so committed that he'd try to enforce that that doesn't happen. However, one thing that I think I've learned throughout this pandemic is actually how much currencies rule over people in our everyday life. And before something like this happens, you don't notice it as much. So that is the end of the We Are The Girls in Claritin Blue podcast. Thank you to Rodney for joining me. It's brilliant to have you back on, but just don't mention Gilly Flatterty going to Manchester United next time.
Well, I think I actually should. Oh, sorry. Thank you for having me on. And I think I should tweet Gilly and tag Richard so that we can say that you've been put up for sale and there's a nice team in red.
on a positive, Rodney, you probably gave one of the most powerful messages we've ever had on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much. You can edit it and send it to me. I can use that as a soundbite for future date.
Definitely will. And thank you to Rich for being my co-host. We haven't got rid of Ali, just to cover that up. She'll be back.
Yes,
soon.
You have. She's
Ali. I'm just keeping your seat warm for you, Ali. So you'll be back next time.
No, she won't.
That's it. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.